Thank you, everyone. Hello. So today we are going to talk about confidential virtual machines. We'll demystify them for you. We'll try to understand the system stack that supports confidential virtual machines. And for the first part of the presentation, we'll learn about what enlightenment means. And for the second part of the presentation, where Ankita will speak about how we can achieve that enlightenment. So I'm Archana, this is Ankita. We are both from Azure Linux team at Microsoft. Azure Linux is a first-party distribution, and lately we have been working on enabling CVMs on Azure's confidential virtual machines. So let's begin. What to expect? By the end of this talk, you should be able to understand what confidential virtual machines are, what are some cloud provider trends, and so in this talk, we'll be focused on confidential virtual machines provided by cloud providers. Although these concepts that we'll learn about, UKI, secure boot, measured boot, whatever, I mean, these are as applicable to bare metals also, but we'll be focused on cloud providers, and we'll learn about certain gaps. And you'll also learn about what you need to configure to enable your operating system image for confidential virtual machines. Okay, so let's start from basics. Confidential virtual machines are an implementation of confidential compute, protects your data in use, and the TE level, the Trusted Execution Environment boundary, exists on VM level. So that means your data in use is protected from the higher privileged layers, such as your host OS or hypervisor or emulator devices. It offers the most flexible approach. For example, compared to the application level enclave-based implementations of TE, you can just, if you have something on your cloud instance or in your VM, you can just easily lift and shift that application inside a confidential virtual machine as of today. Provides remote attestation facilities. You can gain this trust that you are running inside a confidential virtual machine environment. You can derive that root of trust from the hardware. It is obviously backed by CPU vendors. Hardware extensions make it possible to encrypt memory. AMD 7SNP, Intel TDX, there are many others that support this. We are going to be focused on AMD 7SNP and TDX for this talk. Cloud providers are no stranger to this technology. They have been adopting it, and they have been enabling SKUs on their infra to support this. N2D and C3 are recent announcements, and Microsoft, for example, have also supported now confidential GPU with confidential virtual machines. So why are we talking about this? Confidential virtual machines allow cloud providers to guarantee this, that you now have your customer data. They'll have no access to your sensitive workload. It is protected from your higher privileged layers. So now as a user, for example, you have some sensitive application running on your on-prem machines. You can reduce costs. Maybe you can move them onto the cloud. So it increases those use cases, and they just are taking, they're enabling these for you. So, okay. What does memory encryption in CVM entail then? How does the system stack differ? So you do need a special stack for management, communication, and ensuring the security benefits of confidential virtual machine compared to a normal VM and compared to a normal VM. For example, your host and VMM, once your VMM has allocated the memory for the guest, it has no access to that environment, that guest itself. The control is then with the guest firmware. Guest firmware takes the initial measurements and it will store it. And then guest kernel is CVM aware. What that means is that you need to enable some configurations in the guest kernel itself. And that is required because guest kernel is responsible, for example, for declaring what pages are private to it, and then there are some shared pages also between host and guest that are taken care of by guest kernel. The VM and VMM communication transferring from guest to host or host to guest mode happens through VM exit events in a normal VM, whereas in confidential virtual machines, it happens through VMG exit, for example, in AMD, and TD call happens in TDX. And this is and specialized communication protocols are developed for VM and VMM communication. For IO operations and MMIO, the direct access is there in normal VM, and it happens through VM exit events only. But in confidential VM, as we discussed, it happens through explicit VMM calls, and normal IO will raise exceptions, such as VC and VE. And direct memory access, open device access in normal VM, but in confidential VMs, it happens through a dedicated bounce buffer. So that also sometimes adds overhead. And confidential GPU is an example where you can have a dedicated device to T where the device itself is attested. And special communication protocol exists between the device and the confidential virtual machine itself. So moving on, is memory encryption enough to guarantee confidentiality in cloud CVMs? Let's learn about that. So CVMs and guest OS, where is the problem? Confidentiality guarantee does not apply to guest OS. What that means is that once you're inside, once you have your memory allocated to the guest, what is running inside the guest itself, let's say your system executables, they can see the workload that is running within it. They have access to it. And secondly, as I said, there are pages which are declared, which are shared between guest and host, and that is taken care of by guest kernel itself. So you have to be careful about your guest OS itself, and that is why protecting guest OS is important. And how do you do that? Cloud providers, for example, when they launch a VM, they will load this image from somewhere. It is lying somewhere. They'll load it. They'll bring up your guest, and you need to protect this image. So you have to ensure your data at rest and data in use both are protected. Data in use is protected with memory encryption, and full disk encryption will protect your data at rest as well. And you have to achieve this without relying on the host. So you cannot give your decryption keys to the host or the privileged layers to decrypt the encrypted OS image. And you have to also support unattended boot. You cannot type in your password because host can sniff on it. You're trusting your cloud provider with that password. You cannot do that. The solutions to that, you can use VTPM. VTPMs are hardware chips that support, they can store your keys, and you can use them to also perform certain operations like decryption, encryption, etc., etc. But you do need to place some trust in your cloud providers because these are usually implementations from cloud itself. Alternative to that, remote attestation. In your boot path somewhere, you attest to the environment itself and then bring your OS image and bring it up. You don't trust the cloud attest. How would a consumer know what it is, how it is? So your evidence, it is derived from a root of trust. PSP, which is Platform Secure Processor, encoding Enclave, TDX, and AMD. They are hardware-based security modules. You can generate your attestation evidence from there. They are signed by keys from hardware vendors. Then you can fetch your certificates. So the vendors would give you certificates. You can use those certificates to verify the authenticity of this report and place your trust in the environment itself. Cloud providers usually have their implementation of verifiers such as MA, Google Attestation Agent, or Intel Trust Authority. You can build your own verifier even if you don't want to place any trust in those as well. So, this diagram. Okay. Okay, I'll skip this diagram, but it just shows how the attestation happens, BASIC and AMD Service MP versus Intel TDX. I'll transfer to Ankita for further.
Thank you, Archana. So we are short of time, but okay. So what does the guest kernel or the guest OS need to take care of at this point? It needs to take care of the kernel. We need to have some patches applied already for Service NP and TDX. We need to enable certain kernel configurations. Then for, you know, protecting the data at rest, we need to have full disk encryption. Secure boot is needed so that at each step of the boot chain, we know that only trusted bits are executing. And then since we are encrypting the disk, we also need to, you know, give the password only when the system is in a good known state. So these are the kernel configurations that you must enable. The first two ones are the mandatory, which are necessary. The second kernel configurations basically are optional, and they are mainly if you want to attest using the hardware root of trust. So how do you boot the Linux in a secure fashion? This is a traditional Linux boot chain, you know. We have the firmware, which loads the bootloader, then the kernel, followed by init ramfs, and then we ask the user for the password, and then you decrypt the OS volume. However, with the secure boot, we have a signature check at each step, and this applies until the Linux kernel, where, you know, the boot chain is secured until your Linux kernel. So this is how the secure boot works. But is this still enough for a confidential VM? Actually, no. Because what if some arbitrary init RAM FS comes into picture at this point? How do you still protect your boot chain? So this has been simplified with the concept of UKI or Unified Kernel Image, where we combine all these three components, the kernel, init RAM FS, and the kernel command line into a single UEFI binary, which can be easily integrated with the UEFI secure boot, and it is signed by the certificate of the distribution vendor. So this is how the CVM secure boot flow would look like. With the help of UKI, you don't need to sign those three components separately, or you don't need to take care of them separately. You can use the UKI for that matter. Why UKI? I've already spoken about these three points. However, there is a slight flexibility trade-off that comes with the security of the UKI. We have a static init RAM FS, so you cannot do any runtime module customization with your kernel. Secondly, the kernel command line is static, so you need to have a mechanism to, you know, discover your root volume. You cannot just go and, you know, put in the GUID of your root volume and it's going to decrypt. And then there is no traditional UI like the, you know, bootloader UI that we have usually. So then, as we already spoke about, right, the system, the boot chain is secured using secure boot, but we still need to know that, you know, are we revealing the password for our root volume to a good system state? It is actually the genuine CVM that we want to reveal it to. So that is where the measured boot comes into picture. It is a standard way for checking the authenticity of our boot chain, and this is done using TPMs and something called platform configuration registers or PCR. What happens is, at each step of the boot chain, we basically take the hash of each component in the boot chain, for example, the shim, the system reboot, etc. And then all of these hashes are recorded in your TPMs. Then when the system boots, these hashes are recorded while the booting process. And then finally, this PCR prediction is checked with the actual, you know, PCR measurements that we already had in the TPM. If both of them match, only then we you know, reveal the key to the root volume so that we can decrypt our OS root volume from there on. So we have been talking so much about disk encryption. Let's see how the disk layout differs, you know. So in a standard VM, you just have, you know, a boot partition, a root partition, optional, you know, encryption in the root partition. Where in the boot partition, we have all the grub files, or the bootloader files, the kernel, command line, init RAM FS, etc. However, all of that has been squeezed down into the UKI with our CVM. Talking about the root partition, we use usually standard encryption, and we store the password either, you know, in a file, or we prompt the user to give it to us. In this case, we don't need to do that. We use LUKS for encryption, and then there are certain key slots which are sealed by the TPM, as we already spoke about, and they can be used for the decryption. Of course, the root volume is encrypted with the user data. So this is a quick flow of how the full disk encryption and decryption is working. We have an LUKS container on the root volume, which generates a master key, we create a TPM policy, seal the key with the TPM, and then, you know, we store that key in the metadata, as I already spoke about, and we encrypt the root volume. This is how the boot decryption works, and we have already spoken about this one. So that brings us to the end of this talk. Our time is also up. Just 1 minute I'll take for this one. So this is what, you know, are the key takeaways, and we hope you were enlightened by the end of this talk. Thank you. Just a quick... Thank you so much. These are some of the references, and I would just like to mention we have a talk coming up tomorrow by Whiteley in the virtualization dev room on a similar topic with some updates, so please go and check it out. Thank you.